Hello, this is Daryl War for the retrospective to episode 18 in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Intro, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is a relief series for the 1960s soap opera Dark Shadows, inviting a whole lot of other key players from other shows and movies that happened around the same time period, even if they weren't released in the same time period, more or less. So that's the intro anyway. Now this is 2023, either the end of June, the beginning of July, I haven't decided which. I've just been enjoying these things so much, and I also found out one of my inspirations for a portion of this episode has passed away somewhat recently. Tina Turner. I didn't really watch the whole of Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, but I saw the ad on TV many times, as many people in my age bracket also did. And so, back to episode 18 in the radio drama, one of the inspirations for Sir Simon Milligan from The Kids in the Hall. Since this episode in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows was released in December of 2018, I am presuming that this inspiration came into my mind that same year, 2018. And I was with friends going to a restaurant, and I thought, oh, is that what she said? Because I was thinking, you know, what can Sir Simon Milligan introduce the show with that's going to be funny and pluck from another fandom, maybe? And so I asked the friend. We were actually on our way to the restaurant, and then inside the restaurant when she found the line on her smartphone from the internet. And I was like, was it Welcome to Another Edition of Thunderdome in that movie? She said, oh, yes. And then she added to me that whoever Tina Turner's character was, she had approached Mad Max and said, aren't we a pair, Raggedy Man? And I thought, oh, you know, I came up with, like, Hecubus could say, aren't we the pair, Raggedy Master? So that was a big inspiration. And so I wanted to mention that because I found out that inspiration quite recently passed away. And I remember when Helena was still a part of the project, she, you know, was happy to see that influence as well. You know, back when we were doing the test listen scenes together. Anyway, wanted to mention that first and foremost, after the usual intro, because I'm trying to just jump in to retrospection on episode 18, Braving the Waters in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. This one has got everything but the kitchen sink. And I say that, meaning the kitchen sink would be Barnabas Collins. He, I don't believe, makes any kind of appearance in this episode, but we've got so many others. We've got Bewitched and The Ghost of Mrs. Muir. We've got Samantha Stevens for the first time. We've got an intro into the Addams Family I'd wanted to do for years. Also, Chris Jennings, the saving of Mr. Wells, the innkeeper at the Collinsport Inn, who I grew up as Mr. Drummond on Different Strokes, so it was weird seeing him in Dark Shadows. Like, whoa, okay, you know, it's just these little flashbacks of people who are like, I know that person from this in the 80s and that in the 80s, and oh, just so many people. Oh, like her Burke Devlin, wasn't that the guy that Blanche dated who kind of abused her? Or, you know, like he'd been in other things. I recognized Mitchell Ryan. And again, I'm grateful that he was kind of open about the whole alcohol thing, because if I didn't have that, that was another reason I knew what all the cuckoo was about. Because you have an addiction that you deal with a lot of your life, and you can tell when other people are popping into one, even if it's not yours. You know, you could just tell. And so when people will make those jokes, it's like, yeah, and that's part of your addiction to this stuff. That is just, yeah, et cetera, et cetera. We've talked about the cuckoo before. I don't want to talk about it, at least right now. We'll talk about it later. But anyway, yeah, similar actors, you know, actors that you grew up with or in these old shows where you go, whoa, wait a second, these reruns that you didn't see until way later in your life. Recordings, these DVDs that, yes, people still collect DVDs and CDs and now even vinyl records again. Hallelujah. Now what we've got from my pal, pen pal, who agreed with me about Josette and Time Lords and all the other stuff. That was so cool. And also the As Time Goes By stuff she also agreed with, so just trying to give her a name without giving her a name. And so this is what she got for the intro with Hecubus and Milligan for episode 18. Sir Simon and Hecubus exchanging terms of dark endearment is so funny. Raggedy Master, Tedious Miscreant, and Menial Mongrel. And I think she wrote one and then drew a heart. So one heart, one love, maybe. Moving on to the Evans Cottage, and then Sam would like Maggie to meet the ghost of Captain Gregg, and he's going to whip out the compass that I invented in the first season. so that Sam could connect with Captain Greg at his leisure, and Captain Greg just gave him a compass. I just felt it was the perfect symbol, nautical object that could easily be enchanted somehow. So all Sam has to do is tap on it, and Captain Greg will show up, presumably. So he does, and Maggie, as the reincarnation of Josette, welcomes Captain Greg, and wonderful to meet a friend of Sarah Collins. Now, this kind of surprised me as I was re-listening to it. Oh, I don't know as I am exactly a friend to her. Well, little Sarah is a friend per se, or more of an admired acquaintance. I think what I was trying to point out is that maybe they weren't fully friends yet, but they had had a few discussions. Because I believe Sarah explains to Maggie in episode 10 that it was a sea captain that told her to come back, that it was okay to come back. She had known him before, but felt that he was very funny. So we didn't get too much of that. So this is just showing that Greg and Sarah are becoming friends, slowly. And Maggie expresses that she understands that she's discovered she had the capacity to move in the realms of flesh and spirit. So, again, going back to Josette as a reincarnation with a ghost that floats around in Dark Shadows. And due to having had that mixture in the various versions of Dark Shadows. So with this relief series for the original, we're just going full tilt with the possibilities of all that Josette could be in Maggie Evans. And Greg says, so I've heard that she could do such things. A remarkable accomplishment. It makes me feel more at home. But that's not the reason that Captain Daniel Greg has been summoned. Sam wants to take him to the witch's abode that he had spoken of, and Greg doesn't want to go back. And the reason Greg doesn't want to go back is that Endora ended up sending him somewhere that was really bad, just miserable squall. It was some supernatural area that a ghost could be sent to by a witch, and it was just a miserable, like being on a ship in a horrible storm. That kind of experience. And he was stuck there until Sam had the compass to get him out, not knowing why. And I decided, yeah, he would look at it and go, oh, why is the compass spinning like that? Because originally when he got the compass, he's like, this compass is broken, when he originally got it from Captain Greg. And he was like, no, move around the room, check out how it works. And it would always point to Captain Greg. So maybe I'll use that in another episode somehow, where it's like, where are you? Where are you? And, if I look north and maybe he could find him or whatever, but I haven't used that quite yet. I just figured that was a good little piece of the enchantment. So at the key moment, it was so incredible when I was writing episode 12. It's like, I want Captain Greg back. Oh, I invented that compass to bring him back at any time, huh? Okay. But when he looks, where is Captain Greg on this supernatural plane that Endora the witch has sent him to? So what's the compass going to do? Yeah, it's going to spin erratically. So Sam sees that in this crazy moment in which he really needs, he's very tense, very stressed out, and he's looking at the compass going, why is it spinning like that? And he taps it and it gets Greg out of where Endora had put him. It was one of those incredible moments, putting all these worlds together and coming up with a little device that could just change everything, and boom, there is what you need at the moment you need it. But Greg is not looking forward to facing Endora again, and that's for sure, because, I remember going on about this and just figuring this out. And I still, it was like the first part of episode 11 in the first season in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, and you're just left hanging. And Greg encounters Endora and realizes, she asked me for a dance when I was alive, and I said no, because she kind of gave me the creeps, and that was really bad when somebody's taking a chance like that, and I just skipped out, and boy, she remembers. I would not have even thought of it, even here in the afterlife. So yeah, it was pretty harsh, and so he doesn't want to go back, and Maggie's like, hey, you won't be alone. My father merely wishes you to accompany him on his journey. That he's not a, Greg's not expecting to be welcome at Morning Glory Circle. But Maggie tries to assure Captain Greg that the repercussions aren't as dire as he believes, and he calls her Mademoiselle Dupre, because he understands. Well, because he knows Sam in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is the reincarnation of André Dupre, but he's got some ghostly memories being a ghost, like, on the other side. And that was where he met Captain Daniel Greg. And when he sees the portrait of Angelique, it kind of sparks something, but then Captain Greg helps him remember the rest of the other side life that he had. Because in my mind, and I was hoping to have this kind of self-explanatory in episode 5 in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, is that André Dupré helped Captain Greg when he passed over to become accustomed to being a spirit, doing certain things. Because André would have been a lot older than Captain Greg as a ghost. And so if Sam is the reincarnation, then Captain Greg as a ghost, meeting him again, would just be like, hey, what's up? In so many words. Captain Greg wouldn't say it that way, of course. So that's how we got ourselves into this situation. And in any case, Sam is going to go get the Madeira so they can all just talk it out. And then Milligan and Hecubus interrupt as they're the hosts, because, oh gosh, there's more kids in the hall in episode 18, too. Because Sam talks about getting the Madeira, Hecubus comes in. Master, people drink a lot in this series, because in Dark Shadows they, and in other shows, but which actually there's quite a bit of drinking, too. And Milligan says, is that a problem, girl drink drunk? Hecubus says, just an observation. But girl drink drunk is a skit in The Kids in the Hall with Dave Foley, who also plays Hecubus in The Pit of Ultimate Darkness in The Kids in the Hall. So that was why that was in there. Is that a problem, girl drink drunk? And he's saying it to a Dave Foley character who also played the guy who got girl drink drunk. You know, he became an alcoholic because somebody was pressuring him to drink. He's like, you drink this, it's a girl drink. And then he's drinking so much. I mean, people who know Kids in the Hall know the skit. It was something that was repeated so many times. But I had to do that. And Milligan moves us to the next scene. What's one of the reasons that I picked them? Because when I was inventing the radio drama scripts, I was thinking, gosh, you know, who can I hire as people who will get us from scene to scene? And it's like, yeah, I want to see Sir Simon Milligan and Hecubus make a comeback. And that's how the title came about, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. So they can always make announcements and intervene and get the audience to the next place and describe what the next place and who's is in the next place in every scene in the radio drama series. So he says, must propel ourselves to a late evening on the RMS Queen Elizabeth, in which our Collinwood matriarch, meaning Elizabeth Collins Stoddard, has found a lone piano and allowed Chopin to possess her fingers as once upon a time. And I got some help from Melissa, who has art history in her background, and she knew a lot of the classical pieces. So when we're talking about it, it was Chopin Nocturne, Etude Opus 10, number 3, and that was heard in Dark Shadows episode 47. There's very often on cruise liners lone pianos in places, especially back in the day. They don't necessarily lock them up. Necessarily. They might have done just for the sake of it's a teetering ship, so why do we want, you know, the possibility that gravity should make this thing make noise and get a lot of the passengers thinking it's a ghost, which in our series it would be regardless. So, in episode 47, that was the tune that Elizabeth was playing the night that I believe Bill Malloy was being killed. And that's the relevance. And in order to reintroduce his character into the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows from the Dark Shadows series, we felt it was appropriate to her playing that song and Bill showing up and being like, I know that tune. Elizabeth's not really thinking somebody's talking to her. She's just sort of talking like, oh yeah, it's one of Chopin's nocturnes. I like to play it now. And then she shifts like, oh, I know that voice. Now, of course, this is my voice doing Bill Malloy, which I don't think is very good. But, you know, I've been told it's okay. It's passing. It'll do. You know, it's pretty good. Yeah, I worked really hard on it. And a lot of this dialogue, it's me and Oisin working it out, like, what's going to fit the best? Like, I think the way that it would work is I would start with something and she'd just fill in where she felt. I'd even left something empty, or maybe he would say it this way or she would say it that way, that kind of stuff. So it's just like, and it could get done pretty quickly with emails. Didn't always have to be phone calls. It was, rarely phone calls, I think. That was more just excitedly telling each other our story ideas for things like that we're outside of this, more or less, and just making each other crack up all the time. I miss those calls. Please call me, Oisin. Yeah, it's just so wonderful, just working with her. And Elizabeth looks at Bill. Bill's ghost. It is you, seaweed and all. So we've still got the seaweed, and he still says, Aya. It used to be I-up. I remember Oisin would describe it that way, but then she realized, oh yeah, it's not I-up. It's Aya. That's just something that Bill tended to say, and other people from Maine tend to say too, or have in the past. He says, sorry about the seaweed. It does have a tendency to drop off and leave a mess, because that happened in the original show as well. And he knows, he says, you've accepted all the other crazy stuff that's happened to your family, Liz. Why not accept me? And he is a drifting spirit on the Atlantic Ocean. So yeah, of course he's going to follow her on the boat. And then at this point, you know, as Elizabeth is wondering, well, why are you coming here now? And Lily, meaning Lily Munster, who is the cousin in this series of Elizabeth Collins-Stoddard. So, Elizabeth, I heard you're playing, and I was wondering, oh my! And so, Elizabeth knows, okay, my cousin Lily's going to be cool with this. We already talked to Uncle Caleb back in episode 13. She just seems super okay with all this, and why not? Because we need to be. We need to just start accepting this crap. And she just calmly explains, another ghost from our past. Cousin Lily, this is Bill Malloy. Bill, this is Lily Drake. I tried to put a mini pause in there just because it's like, is it Lily Munster? Is it Lily Moinster? Is it Lily Dracula? Oh yeah, Lily Drake. I'll just introduce her that way. And so Bill Malloy, the ghost of Bill Malloy, and Lily Munster meet. And this is the point where I say vampire magic, I think, in the previous retrospective. And he's kind of complaining to Lily about the dripping flotsam from the sea, the seaweed. And Liz, I can see you carry a bundle, and quite a nuisance to you, Mr. Malloy, covered in all of that seaweed. Fear not, I can make use of myself. Magic sound effects, and Downeaster style gratitude, Bill says, why, thank you, man. He says, very welcome. And because she's taken the seaweed off, she's removed it. So we start with Bill the ghost as he was in the original Dark Shadows, but at this point now he could just kind of look like his old mortal self. Because Lily has taken away the seaweed with her vampire magic that she slightly inherits from her father, of course, Sam Dracula on the Munsters. And, of course, she says, you see, Lizzie, even the dead awaken at your beauty. And, of course, I recognize that this part of Dark Shadows was taking place in December of 1968, so I had to mention some sort of holiday in there. And he says, what are you here for, Bill? Elizabeth says, I hardly believe it's to wish us a Merry Christmas. And a lot of times, yeah, soap operas don't tend to celebrate any kind of holidays, just because they're always going from moment to moment to moment to moment. And when she makes that crack, Bill says, I always knew that sense of humor was stronger than you let on, Liz. Elizabeth admits that maybe she's seasoned a bit around happier people, but she still wonders why Bill's there at all. And he says, the same reason it's always been between you and I. I want to help in whatever way I can. And Lily Munster, she says, it's precisely what we need. Oh yeah, and then we get to Elizabeth admitting to an indiscretion in her youth, or tracking down a long-lost child. And Bill admits, in times of war, the urgency of life is increased. Don't fret so, Liz. I know all about it. Indiscretion is a pat word to use for what happened. Better to have family with you at that time, too. You are one to regard in high esteem, Ms. Drake. And Lily says, you know, and this is whether or not it is Victoria Winters. Thank you. I like to take some credit for help bringing that little girl into the world, because when you think about it, they went on this long trip, and Elizabeth ends up with child. Who's going to take care of her cousin, who kind of encouraged the whole thing to happen to begin with? So not only would Lily be, we could give her the credit for helping the conception to happen, there's also, you know, the birth, that she'd be there for her the whole 9 yards, or whole 9 months in this case. And they both agree everybody should retire, but Elizabeth should finish the music first. And Bill says, I'll fade away when the music does, but I will come again soon. Please play, won't you? And Elizabeth says, as long as no ship hands object. Bill says, fair enough. And the Chopin Nocturne ending proceeds. One response to the previous scene with Maggie and Captain Greg I wanted to read to y'all. She writes, I love Maggie's emphatic we. To Sam's question, it's the perfect way to show that Maggie and Josette are inseparable. So that's good. She also says, Captain Gregg's description of Sarah as an admired acquaintance is very sweet and gentle, and presages his almost paternal conversation with her in episode 20. So, good. She's catching us up with what lays ahead. It's amazing to me that the gruff sea captain is reluctant to meet Endor again after his social gaffe so long ago. A good subtextual hint at the power of witches. Okay, now we get to Elizabeth and Bill Malloy. Elizabeth comment to Bill Malloy, it is you, seaweed and all, is a great way of showing how unperturbed Elizabeth is about meeting a ghost, even one who is there to help her. I like the way Lily removes the cumbersome seaweed. Ah, some great stuff for 18 from Oisin Nivoy. Two different points. Can't wait to hear the Bill scene with the Chopin Nocturne. I love the I'll fade away when the music does line. My goodness, what a strong and amazing line. Its straightforwardness and lack of self-pity. Very appropriate for Bill, removes from it the melancholy it would otherwise have. And later on she writes, I meant to mention in my first review, I love the title of this episode. The subtitle is Braving the Waters. And she'll say it better than I can. It's so perfect. It so completely evokes what so many of the characters are doing at this point in their lives, as well as, of course, being literally appropriate due to Liz and Lily's ocean voyage. Yeah. And that is true, because I was thinking, well, yeah, Captain Greg's braving the waters too. Victoria's braving the waters of her own psyche and just understanding the Addams household, as Peter Bradford's also doing. And Chris, too. Chris is braving the waters with coming back to take care of Amy and facing all of what he's got to internally deal with and face in his own life. Yeah, there's a lot of braving the waters in Braving the Waters. And Oisin also says, the master, people drink a lot on this show, comment is great, though I felt like replying to him, probably not as much as they take sedatives on this show. Great phrase, allowed Chopin to possess her fingers, a great evocation of the experience of playing a piece of music, but of course, much more, it blends effectively with the many other types of possession we bear witness to in Dark Shadows. The Liz and Bill voices work very well. The line, I know that voice, sounds utterly perfect. I really appreciate how you do the paradoxical lightness of Bill's voice that we've commented on, how one would expect his voice to be deep, but it turns out that it really isn't, as is perfectly right. You've done Liz's voice deeper than his, which is as it should be. I love the humor in Bill's voice in Thank You for Adding That, Liz. And another pen pal for that scene. Classic piano playing. It is you, seaweed and all. Ha! Ghosts can be anywhere, can't they? I discovered we sure can be, but for some reason I got to be covered in seaweed. Oh, but then we fix that amusing problem. I'll fade away when the music does. How poetic. Another pen friend. Bill, being a deckhand on Liz's boat, having seaweed, seems he rhymes a bit. Now they have another ally. Maybe he'll meet Captain Greg's ghost soon. I'm kind of presuming that they've maybe met already. Just met in passing. Because in that scene, there was something about Blasted that Liz said, and Bill mentioned it sounds like another seafaring ghost I know. And another pen friend wrote, Bill seeing Liz again is like seeing a port in a storm. Very interesting way of saying it's good to see you again, seaweed and all. Lily and Bill get along well, despite the flotsam, which doesn't affect her part of the normal scenery, and to be very grateful for Lily to take it away, too. Having a child was the fun thing good to come from Lily's previous trip with Liz. Ah, and Helena's take on this scene, that crack that Hecubus made about everyone drinking on the show was a great line. After all, it is true, i.e. Roger. I like the interaction between Bill Malloy and Liz, but I felt that she could have sounded a little more shocked or surprised to see her old friend. She sounded a little deadpan. I mean, I know that Liz has a deep voice, but this is the first time that she has seen Bill since he was alive. Just my thoughts. Lily taking away the heavy seaweed off of Bill was a great gesture. And Bill and Liz are going to have another scene above the ship. I'm eager to know if there's some unfinished business between them. Seemed to be implied, but I could be wrong. And Hidden Object for the scene says, there is comfort in an old friend, even when they are setting you straight. I like that you have characters facing their fears and admitting their mistakes. Very nice. So this next scene, oh, it's so multi-layered because it's more than one scene. It's the big Braving the Waters scene with Sam and Greg driving to Morning Glory Circle. And then there's Samantha Stevens and there's Endora and all this stuff. So, car driving noises, and Sam's hoping Maggie's assured Captain Greg enough to come that far, and Greg's sitting in the automotive, come on, Andre, and are you sure? Very sure. Now, the thing is, the car comes to a halt, the engine stops, outdoor noises, car opens and shut, steps, car door opens. Sam does not see Captain Greg getting out of the car. And this is, again, you know, I always get kind of excited when I can do this mano a mano, you know, like the Sam and Greg. And so you're just going to sit there, aren't you? A mighty sea captain scared of one witch. And Greg, you know, he's been through hell. I'm not even going to say it as one word. I'm going to say it multiple syllables. Andre, you have no idea of the predicament she put me in. If it wasn't for the compass, I might still be in that never-ending squall. Definition for squall is a sudden violent gust of wind or localized storm, especially one bringing rain, snow, or sleet, low clouds, and squalls of driving rain, a loud cry, He emitted short, moanful squall. But what I remember is, like, it's a sea thing, you know, it's like a storm. Yeah, if you're stuck in that, you don't want to go back. You know, this is like risking going back to that, and you just gave Sam, you know, but Sam is also saying, yes, and I've still got your compass in a safe place to use and pull you out again if need be. So what do you have to worry about? Greg's still worried. With gravity, she is formidable. Sam, yes, a formidable witch. That makes her precisely who we need to help us with that Bouchard woman. And your tucking tail. And Greg, shamefaced, perhaps I am merely a ghost. I mean, he's really worried, and I would be too, honestly. So, yeah, I'm kind of cheering Sam, you know, for getting him going, but yes, and a stalwart seaman, and I'm the reincarnation of a French aristocrat turned into a piss-drunk painter whose own daughter had to make ends meet as a waitress for us to survive. I may have come down in the world, but I won't be ashamed to admit it. And he's just saying all this as Sam would if he recognized that he was André Dupré, and also admits I'm a piss-drunk painter in this life. He's not ashamed. You know, he's just like, I'm going to admit it. Like, I'm just... that he's come down in the world. But, you know, these things are the way they are. And Greg admits, and you are all the better for it, Sam Evans. He has to call him André, but he recognizes that he is Sam Evans in this life. Sam says, thank you. Now, if only I had the wherewithal to make you the better for your mistakes. And Greg gets a little affronted. My mistakes, where did I err? And Sam says, well, as you related on the drive out here, you objected to one dance. One dance, Daniel. That was it. Now, that mortal decision, because Greg was not a ghost when that happened, of course, he was immortal. Now that mortal decision is smacking you in the backside, and you can't face that. One dance with a lady you had no idea was a witch, but you had an innate sense she was unlike other women. And Greg, there were multiple reasons that he refused to dance with Endora. And he's, I could see no aristocratic emblems on her to show that she had the right to make such a request of me like that. Because I think back in the day, that was easier, whereas if it was just any chick, it would have been like, oh, hey, why are you asking me? Somebody should introduce us first, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the amenities, all the proprieties of the time period, etc., etc. And she was brazen. It merely threw me off guard. And it is a fortunate circumstance for which she now holds a grudge. And Sam says, ah, not only that, it gives you a history with her, who we need to help us. When you think about that, it should make this endeavor even more welcome. And Greg is contemplative, perhaps. And perhaps she isn't even in the house at all, just that Mrs. Stevens you went in search of before. Because that is what Greg went to look for. He looked for, you know, he was saying, witches, they're harmless enough, and I know one just outside of Manhattan, meaning Samantha Stevens. He wasn't counting on Endora. He didn't remember Endora at all, mortal or otherwise. So maybe Mrs. Stevens is just there, and Greg says, this is currently true from what I can sense. Because as a ghost, he's got the senses. But that formidable witch could crop up at any given moment. Of that I am sure. And he knows, you know, as the rest of us know who have watched Bewitched most of our lives. And Sam asks, but Mrs. Stevens is in there, yeah? Indeed she is. All right. And this is the part where I'm kind of bending some of the rules that have already been bent by many people that have come before me. Because we've established in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows that Sam is the reincarnation of André. He remembers meeting Captain Greg as a ghost. André was a ghost, and that's how Greg recognizes, André, is that you? And all these things. So he grunts, so that's a grab. Greg saying, André, hands clear. So with those words, we understand that Sam is pulling Greg out of the car. He's a ghost, but this gets explained. I needed to get you out of that car and upright, Sam says. And Greg says, no one could touch a ghost, but, and Sam says, another ghost, and I sure can be one, maybe a little of that astral projection Maggie's got runs in the family. Now that I've got you out of that car and we're standing eye to eye, I tell you that you must come with me. So, his explanation of that is saying that with some otherworldly powers, understanding that he was a ghost when Greg was a ghost, that they met then, and that he's establishing his old life into his new one. He also has some of the powers that Maggie as Josette has with the astral projection stuff. So with that, he finds a way to pull a ghost, a spirit of another human being, out of his car.
Or truck or whatever he's driving.
He's telling Greg, you must come with me. Greg asks why. Because thus, Mrs. Stevens likes to hide the fact that she is a witch, doesn't she? And if we watch Bewitched, we know that's true. Yes, it is cultural kerfuffle to her husband, at least that's the tale. So she shan't admit that to me, will she? I'm a stranger, a mere mortal at her door, whereas you are something that she could recognize if you let her see you. So, That's Sam's argument, and it's a good one. And Greg says, this is so, and then I take from the poem, Oh Captain, My Captain. He slams the door after you, you know, to try to get him to go. Now we switch over. Finally, getting Samantha. I was re-listening to this tonight. I didn't do the greatest job of Elizabeth Montgomery, but I did my best. And other people were like, hey, it's fine. So Samantha comes to the door, and I had to figure this out, this dialogue, because it's a woman. Is it 60s? Two men come into the door. Can we have a moment alone? Oh, that sounds really wholesome, doesn't it? Not, you know. So, you know, may I help you? I most certainly hope so, says Sam. My name is Sam Evans, and this is my companion, Captain Daniel Gregg. Sorry, Hecubus, you didn't get a point for this one. Save it for later. Because he said, hello, my name is Sam Evans, and blah, blah, blah. Might we discuss a matter in private with you, Mrs. Stevens? And Samantha says, well, I need to know more about the matter first. What is the problem, Mr. Evans? Just explains, hey, you know, my companion, you see him, he's outfitted a little strangely. And he looks the part of a sea captain, says Samantha. But not a modern one, says Sam. No, not exactly. Are you currently looking for a contract, Captain Gregg? And Gregg says, hardly, madam, hardly. And he admits, I'm not entirely of this world anymore. You can only see me as I am allowing you to see me. And Samantha at first says, oh, and then she goes, oh. You know, she starts to get it as a witch. She knows what's going on. And Sam says, yes. And the captain has come to call earlier in the hopes of finding you, Mrs. Stevens. But he came in contact with your mother instead. I'm afraid. I'm afraid, Samantha says, so am I. So that's when she says, do come in, because she sees, okay, yeah, they're not trying to scam me, and they're also not trying to get, like, fresh or, you know, ooey or whatever. So, yeah, she realizes, okay. And she also knows, hey, I'm a witch, I can get rid of them anytime I want. And they know that, which is also more reassurance. She offers refreshments, or we could get to the heart of the matter. Everybody agrees the sooner the better. And she admits, I'm prepared to take a break from being an average housewife. It's easier when others are willing to come to the point. And I notice that a lot in Bewitched. It's like, if people just come to the point with Samantha, hey, I know, and I know you're hiding it, and I know why you're hiding it, let's get to the point. And she's like, okay, sure. Yeah, very likely she would be. Trying to fit in among mortals, and Gregg admits with her, I can well imagine. And she says to her, smiling, I suppose you could. And she says, you're a ghost, and he says, you're a witch. And they both agree, yes. And Samantha says, less practicing. That's the thing, you know, she tried to promise Darren that she wasn't going to do any of it, but it just doesn't work. And that's the whole reason the darn series exists, or at least half of it. And Sam admits, I'm nothing but a poor artist who lives in a cottage in Maine, but I was more than that once upon a life. And Samantha, oh, I see this in you. And it's like, yep, you're right. And if you could see that so quickly, you're the witch we need. My household has had a struggle with reincarnation, and much needs to be set right due to things we caused by a witch we did not need. And Samantha, tisking, yes, previous lives will thunder their echoes at us the more that harmony is thrown out of balance. And Sam Evans, like, that is the case in a nutshell. Still, we have a more recent one as concerns my friend and your mother. And Samantha, cringing irritation, not surprising, you should know, to be on the safe side, she might be snooping around listening to every word we say. Of that I have no doubt, says Gregg. And Sam says, to put it plainly, Captain Gregg and she had a falling out in the 1860s at a time when he was mortal himself. And Samantha is already worried. Uh-oh, did you withhold one of her fancies, Captain Gregg? And he refused, or he did something that made his refusal known. If I had known what she was, a simple dance might have helped us now, because he would have had a rapport with Endora already. Hey, can you help us? But Endora's angry that she recognizes this man who refused her in the 1860s. But mortals know little of these mysteries, because in the 1860s, Gregg was still mortal. And then, one of my favorite lines that I've said to friends, too, like when I released this episode, Samantha, almost whispering in shock, you denied my mother a dance? And Gregg says something about her made me suspicious, and my mind was weighing with other fruitful considerations put upon a seafaring man, and etc., etc. Yeah, Samantha could tell that Gregg and Sam go way back. And then Sam finally asks Samantha the dreaded question, are you familiar with an Angelique Bouchard? And Samantha is gulping and not wanting to say so. And Gregg is saying, you must be. And she's making all kinds of noises. And Gregg is like dropping pretense, because that's what Samantha was saying. You know, when people can just get to the point, dropping pretense was your welcome when we came. Admitting knowledge of another witch should be easy. And Samantha, usual awkward tone. Just try to get that well in there, because that's something that Samantha Stevens is known for. And then sounds of Endor appearing. I think it was like a harp, because I think in both shows there's a harp used. And Endor shows up. Is that what all this fuss is about? Angelique Bouchard. I could just so easily see Agnes Moorehead doing all of this. There was just something about grabbing her character and just taking it into my psyche and just going, yeah, I can do it, I can do it, I can do it. And then just being like, wow, I did do it, look at that. And, I don't know, you just invest yourself in all this stuff and it comes. Sam is, just, he's happy to take on the reaction, yes, my good witch, Angela Bouchard is what all of this fuss is truly about. And then Uncle Arthur gets a little nod there, you know, where it's like there's a comparison between Angelique and Uncle Arthur. It's like more than Uncle Arthur. Plague of hostility that Sam explains as Angelique is. But yeah, like, Endora's impressed with Sam Evans because she can see he's the reincarnation of another guy. And, you know, I admire that. It's good to see when one person can blend two lifetimes together so well. And then Sam says, that's nothing. My daughter is blending more than three as we speak, because it's three with Josette, Kitty, Maggie, but also the Hansel character I added too, so there's more going on. And Endora admits, close enough to a witch in her own right. Because with the bewitched witches, I think it's just a really long lifespan. Might be immortal, I'm not sure. You have to ask Aunt Clara about that one. But Endora says, Angelique is a tough case. And then here is the retroactive saving of Bathia Mapes. After what she did to Bathia, meaning Angelique, we have regarded her with disgrace. Samantha Stevens asks, Angelique did that to Bathia? And Endora admits, oh yes, she's recovered, thankfully, but it shouldn't have taken half a century to do so. It was going to be a century, and I was like, oh, that's too long. Let's do half a century. I should have done a quarter century, in all honesty. I mean, it should just not have taken that long. Since then, we've left Angelique to the riffraff. And Greg says, irresponsibly so, and that's when Endora finally admits that Greg is there. I almost didn't notice you, Captain Daniel Greg. You managed a way out of that C-word peril. You were more indomitable than I thought. And Greg admits, as are you. But also, here we go, with some of the stuff that I get so, wow. And being so, taking care of a witch, who you've admitted is one of your own. And I could just totally, I could see Agnes Moorehead, Endora, like the eyelashes, just pucker together. Marginally, Captain Greg. Marginally. Just something about that line. Greg says, if she could so vehemently harm another, as the Bathia you spoke of, this Angelique is powerful enough to concern you more than your slippery attention has allowed. That she's powerful enough, okay. And Samantha admits, he's got a point there, Mother. And then, going back to Bewitch continuity, Samantha had been Queen of the Witches, I guess. So, Endora says, yes, and if you hadn't given up your royal duties, Samantha, you could have squared this away much quicker. It'll take Witch's Council to get anything done now. So, try and remember, we're in December 1968, roughly, with episode 18 in the pit. And Sam asks, so you will help us? And Endora admits, I haven't said that yet. It's up to your captain here to make amends first. And eventually, you know, we get to it. And so I also try to add, with various books that I've gathered over the years, certain things where we really do have to add nautical phrases and terms and that kind of thing. So Endora's fishing for an apology and, like, to make amends. And Samantha is asking, how about a captain? Time and tide waiteth for no man, which is kind of a famous nautical saying. And Greg answers her with another one. I, Mrs. Stevens, we must take the current when it serves. And asks Endora, madam, I hereby bestow my regrets and apologies for refusing your request of a dance so long ago. Heartily accepted, Endora says. And I would like to add, oh, what suggestion have you to make that we might have that dance at this very moment? And that was one of the things that I was dying to get so many people reading and listening. Just respond. Haven't you been waiting years for this? Since episode 11 in the Pit of Ultimate Darkness, haven't you been waiting years for this answer? And the review boxes, you know, people probably said stuff on the social media casinos, you know, that's what I call the big tech ones, they're social casinos, because they work the same way. Yeah, maybe people talked about it. I never saw a darn thing, because I go by email and the review boxes, and because I don't want to be driven even more cuckoo than I was driven already. Yeah, and then Thurman Waltz. Endora realizes, yeah, perhaps it will be more charming, says Captain Greg, of an experience in the graces provided us in the here and now, would it not? Because he knows she can conjure the music. Well, she's a witch, and it's gonna be pretty easy. He's just gotta make the offer, and he does. And then she says, yeah, it would indeed, I suppose, I ought to provide the orchestra. And Thurman Waltz I can't remember the back history. Maybe it was something that did come out in the 1860s that was penned or published in sheet music or something. But it was something I really had to dig and hunt for. And Greg asked, Madam, sir. So they're bowing to each other and starting to dance. Both Sam and Samantha are just admiring the whole thing. And, oh, they, you know, have gone through the ceiling up to the clouds. And I had to get, see, that's how I found that awesome Bewitched website. It's been around for so long. A couple decades, I think, at least. One or two decades. I think it's called, like, harpiesbazaar.com or something like that. But they had the sound effects. So I was able to, you know, that's how I found them, as I was looking for sound effects for Bewitched. And I found the nose twitch one through them. And that's how it ended up in this episode in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, because Sam is wondering, you know, I wonder where they went. And Samantha says, I can show you, twinkle noise. And that's, oh, they're into the clouds, you know, very inspired by, I think, yeah, Venus and Baron Munchausen dancing into the clouds. So it's kind of the same idea. They start on the ground and they just go up and up and up. And Hecubus asks, isn't that a slice of heaven, master? A dance in the clouds for a ghost and the witch, says Milken, making up for a grudge in their past. It's as polite a gesture as I can imagine.
Now for that one pen pal she was enjoying. I am speechless, master.
A welcome sound, if only it would last. Loving the banter between Namilk and Hecubus. And then I like Sam's cunning plan to get Samantha to let slip her witchiness by her ability to see Captain Greg. Yeah, that's how he figured it out. And the fact that he had to refer to the captain twice to get her to do it. The way Samantha says, you denied my mother a dance, is laden with meaning. The tone makes it sound like a portent of doom. Interesting that Samantha can't pronounce Angelique's name, but Endora drops in and just gets on with it. Her response is a hint at her power. Endora and Captain Greg's dance is wonderful. I can just see them floating away. Yeah, I remember writing her back and saying thank you so much. I was waiting forever to hear that from anyone. Just thank you. The whole notion of the relief series, unquote, really feels like it's kicking in here as we switch from a dance in the clouds for a ghost and a witch to Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes breezily referencing the record of a nude patient. Okay, very good. That should get us to the next scene, but we gotta read more discussions. And it's almost like a sequence of scenes that blend together where it's like Sam and Greg, Greg, Sam, and Samantha, and then Endora added to the mix. So Oisin adds, fun use of the word automotive for car. It underscores the antiquated background of Captain Greg. I also really enjoy the contrasting natures of Sam slash Andre and Captain Greg's voices. Piss drunk painter is a great description, and I completely adore the line, I may have come down in the world, but I won't be ashamed to admit it. She's got some liking to Sam Evans as I've got. And she says, ha, Angelique Bouchard is what all this fuss is about. Yep, that neatly describes a whole huge swath of Dark Shadows, doesn't it? I love the after what she did to Bathia reference and the fact that Bathia has finally recovered. Yeah, that's the retroactive saving of Bathia Mabes. Oh, another pal. She says, the moral of this story is never refuse a witch a dance, especially when she looks like Agnes Moorhead. You know what? Just don't mess with Agnes. How spirited you are. Oh, I didn't get this joke for several seconds. Nice. Who is Bathia? Probably doesn't matter. Yes, it is possible to have a dance in the clouds. Scene. In audio. Yes. As Sir Simon set up the segment, I was relieved. This is another, who this is. I was relieved and gratified that Maggie was able to convince Captain Greg to go with Sam Evans to the Stevens house. Great sound effects regarding pulling up to Samantha's house. I laughed at parts of the conversation as Sam tried to get Captain Greg out of the car. One part was because I was thinking of the term formidable with regards to Endora at the same time the captain spoke it. Boy, Sam was sure right. Would one dance have killed Captain Greg? I bet he'll never make that mistake again. I felt you captured Samantha very well, and I enjoyed the ever-anticipated, well, the conversation between the three was much more intellectual than in irregular episodes of Bewitched, which I appreciated. Colored by descriptive phrases, it made the segment very enjoyable. Seems that even among witches, Angelique strikes fear and apprehension. It seems that Angelique has been causing havoc wherever she goes, even among her own kind. Marginally.
I enjoyed how the topic of Angelique blended into the story and that witches are not happy with one of their own, and how easily this transitioned into a story of Bewitched and how it might involve Endora and Samantha. I also like that the witches' council was brought into the story, being that Angelique is such a problem. It's more intriguing to know it's much bigger than just Endora and Samantha. I always regretted that Samantha gave up her royal position on the witches' council. I think it was trying to show she was more loyal to her husband than her heritage, but when one thinks about how Samantha could have been a liaison between the mortal world and the witches, her position could have done a lot of good while still loving her husband and human life. I really enjoyed the fact that Captain Greg not only apologized but made the gesture of asking Endora for a dance to make amends. That was very pleasing. It made Captain Greg seem like a better man for it, and Endora a better woman. She could have affected him negatively, but the fact that the segment ended so positively was wonderful, and again, I appreciated how the phrasing of the segment was presented very intelligently. Thank you for the hard work. Ah, the one pen pal fellow who helped me with some sound effects in the last episode. He actually said, again, we go back to music. I said, Captain, you said what? Captain clearly didn't want to be in a painting again. Sam was direct calling himself a piss drunk, but he used the right words by saying there was history. The compass was there, and she may not have been there. He's outfitted as a dead guy. They got right to the point at the door, so no need for nonsense icebreaking inside. Even Samantha thought it was a bad move to turn the dance down. Oh dear, reluctance when it's revealed to be about Angelique. So Endora still holds a grudge for that rejection indeed. Amazing, even witches and supernatural folk hold torches for shit after it's long irrelevant. But at least he apologized and she's accepted without pushing and shoving. Bet Samantha and Sam Evans weren't expecting to see that on that day. But neither seem fazed by it. Haha, my daughter is blending three. People need to know that the party is trustworthy. And another pal, I'm sitting in the car with you, Greg says. So yes, I'm sure. So a seaman afraid of a witch, unheard of, a formidable witch we need, and a piss-drunk paper and our trustworthy compass was great. One dance, and look what is still eating you up. My companion looks rather unlikely, yes, as a sea captain, a well-seasoned one, but not exactly a modern one. Are you looking for a contract? Hardly, since I'm no longer of this world. We came in contact with your mother earlier. Oh, then please do come in. Easier to break away from the average housewife when you quickly get to the point, and trying to fit in with mere mortals is quite hard. Wouldn't you agree? Denying a witchy woman a dance? So rude. Well, hello, Endora, all wound up about another witch and a plague of hostility. How good to blend two lives together. And Sam, he is like, it's nothing since my kid is juggling three. Bethia and taking half a century to recover. What the hell? More than your slippery attention has allowed. Look how she is dealing with the so-called riffraff. Sure, blame Samantha for messing up the council. Wow, and apology accepted and offers a dance, and it's a dance that all enjoy. Up, up, and away. And Hidden Object was saying, I feel bad for Samantha having to pretend that she isn't what she really is. It will be interesting to see her interact with the dreaded Angelique. Ah, a dance in the clouds. What a way to make an end to that scene and the past grudge. Samantha is royalty? Yeah, I think that's it for that one. And from Helena, I liked the swift kick that Andre Sam had to give to Captain Greg. Captain Greg seems like a stuck-up elitist. I found it interesting when Andre reflected humbly on the state of his current life and past life, and how Captain Greg needed to get over himself and face Endora. I'm looking forward to Andre slash Sam giving him the kick-butt reason to get out of that car. Don't worry about not having a spot on Samantha voice. I'll give you an A for effort. And you have her demeanor right. She was affable in the series. I can imagine very well of Samantha trying to fit in with the normal, unquote, mortals. We misfits always have such a time with that. Well, one thing you can't argue is that misfits are well remembered than the mortals. That was great on the reference of Sam and Samantha having similar forms of their names. Did you withhold one of her fancies, Captain Greg? I like that line. It's almost like, now you got in trouble with my spoiled mama, didn't you, buddy? Samantha already knew. I was like, wow, when Samantha became shocked over being reminded of Angelique, I can't wait to hear about their first run-in. And following onward, Wonder of Wonders, the captain apologized. I had to rewind to the beginning and notice the ding that accompanies our witches when they or stuff appears. Cool. I liked the backstory you had for Angelique doing something nefarious to one of their own and being ostracized for it. It pretty much makes sense that Angelique is immortal. Off topic, is Samantha immortal too? I never really thought about it until now. But if she never ages... But wait, Andorra aged, but she's immortal. Help me out with that one. Yeah, bewitched rules. They're up and down. As far as I can tell, the witches are immortal. But then there's Aunt Clara, so it's really hard to suss out, I gotta say. And I have a whole book on the topic, then the people who put it together are also, like, grabbing their heads and going, well, think of it multiple different ways. I was surprised that Captain Greg, continuing with Helena's discussion, had asked for Andorra's forgiveness without putting up a fight, but he had to do what he had to do. Of course, the dancing in the clouds scene was cute. That was a great scene and resolution. And I believe for that collection of scenes, that is it. So on we continue in episode 18, after the bewitched household stuff with the ghost of Mrs. Muir, meaning Captain Greg, as the kids in the hall, people venturous to where Dr. Hoffman and Professor Stokes are. They are breezily referencing the record of a new patient at Wincliffe, Amy Jennings, only to discover she had a sibling beyond the deceased and beloved Tom Jennings. As Stokes sees the records and is beginning to explain that there's another brother, there's a knock at the door, Hoffman says come in, and I swear to heaven, I don't know if this was episode of Dark Shadows 632, I know that he meets with Amy in 632, I was just checking that. So maybe this was it, but I swear to heaven, as some of you know, I have a huge crush on Don Briscoe, and that developed many, like a decade ago, over a decade ago. That's why if you've heard At the Sign of the Jack-O-Lantern, me reading that book for LibriVox, Harlan's voice was based on Don Briscoe. I was just so into Don Briscoe back then. That is why. So yeah, maybe I'll see stat hits fly with that if anybody's coherent enough to understand what I'm saying. But, oh my gosh, the scene in Dark Shadows where he shows up and Dr. Hoffman sees him, she has seen Tom, she's seen crazy stuff with Tom Jennings, but in the pitch, just seen the dead body, so this reaction still makes sense. She's freaking out, she thinks it's Tom Jennings. They wanted to hire the actor again, so just make him a twin brother, easy peasy, but and then also you could make it as crazy as you want to with the supernatural soap opera, somebody freaking out. But I swear, her freaking out and Don Briscoe's face, before they cut to commercial, said it all. These lines that were created for him. Hoffman's freaking out. Chris in the pit is saying, swell, here we go. This happens every time. Every time. I mean, that was what his face was saying. Really, I mean, it was scary, cut to commercial, you know, have him just look like nothing, and she's freaking out, so I just upped it. Stokes is there, I mean, not in the original Dark Shadows, but he's in the pit, you know, flipping pages. Oh yes, you see, just what I'd been looking through in the Jennings case. You must be Tom's twin brother, Chris. Now, Hoffman is still freaking out. I just upped the ante on that. You know, I was doing this, the demo, for my husband, and as I was just getting so into Hoffman freaking out, I was like, oh my gosh, she sounds like Claymore. She sounds like Charles Nelson Reilly. The ghost of Mrs. Muir. Just the absurdity of everything. And so Chris in the pit says, yes, sir, I'm Chris Jennings. And Stokes says, the resemblance is remarkable. And Chris, still dead, but so I've been told. Of course the resemblance is remarkable if you're identical twins. And he doesn't know Dr. Hoffman from a hole in the ground, so he asks Professor Stokes, are you Dr. Hoffman? And he's like, oh no, and she's still freaking out in the distance. I am Professor T. Elliot Stokes, Dr. Hoffman, Julia, are you quite all right? She's not, obviously. And she calms down. Oh yes, his brother, so you are Chris Jennings. And Chris, bad attempt at patience. That's who I am, all right. It was bad enough when Tom was alive, but now that Tom has passed away, I can be certain that not only will I be perturbing people with my looks and voice, I get the burden of scaring the living daylights out of everyone I meet. And Stokes, as calm as he comes, a most unpleasant disposition, I must say. And Chris, you're telling me. So, yeah, just trying to get everybody as accurate as possible. Aye, aye, aye.
And so there's some good stuff, just like explaining how well he knows Amy, and thankfully, Professor Stokes, oh, you won't be long, Doctor. And, oh, no, thank you for asking. So they're walking down the hall, Chris and Dr. Hoffman. So Chris is, he's got a gift, and Hoffman notices that, and I'm sure she'll be elated to have it. And Chris says, are you? All right, I'll be honest. That was a pleasantry. And Chris says, thank you, Dr. Hoffman. It helps when people are honest. And Hoffman reflects, yes, that's been something I've been noticing a lot of lately. Honesty helping others. Here's the key, Mr. Jennings. Please lock the door when you're finished with your visit and come back to my office. So also trying to get to, yeah, I think it's 632, the verbatim, some of the lines. And it was noticed that I gave Amy a little bit more leverage with Chris because somewhere in there, in the original Dark Shadows, he saw the forecast in the newspaper and was angry that there was going to be a full moon. Gee, what does that mean? Oh my gosh, Daryl, don't give me a spoiler. Shut up. So in this instance, I give Amy the newspaper because, you know, she's not speaking so much to Chris. Chris has given her the gift, the box of paint. She slammed it on the floor. And, oh, look, says Amy, weather forecast, cold and clear with a full moon. Full moon, Chris. That means you'll disappear like you always do. See, I figured she's known him her whole life. She's going to notice. Oh, Chris disappears during a full moon. Why does that always happen? Or just hears about it. And Chris says, how do you know about that? I'm your sister, Chris. I remember. You did what you had to do, Chris. You brought me the present. You can go now. That goes back to verbatim, you know, lines that she actually had. It pretty much goes the same way it does, and I think it was 632, the Dark Shadows episode. And I just did my best with the both of the characters, and it's more or less the same. I think I even put the same music in, if I could help it. I tried to make her not so shrill, and I tried to do the weeping that Amy did, just do it as verbatim as I could, with a little twist that Amy knows about the full moon stuff. And of course, see, Chris for the pit right now is still locked in the soap opera. We'll see that in subsequent episodes. Amy, I give her more leeway, a little more leverage, because she's a child, and she kind of pick up on the nuances a little bit easier. Plus, there was that darned episode, it's coming up, where she can hear the widows. She's just got the vibe. She's got something. So Amy is a little more open than Chris is. Ah, I guess we go to what people had to say about that scene. The one pen pal. I like the way Chris bringing Amy a box of paints echoes Willie being given the calligraphy tools. Both individuals feeling abandoned are given the chance to benefit from occupational therapy. Now, I told her when I wrote her back, the Willie and calligraphy thing, that's very much from me, whereas the Amy and paints thing, that was original series. But still, I'm happy to get the commentary because then there's a dialogue. I can tell her, hey, one was invented by me, the other wasn't. That scene wraps up. She's all, Sir Simon's comment, this series ventures between pain and hilarity, is the perfect summary both of the ultimate pit, where the combination is entirely intentional, and Dark Shadows, where I think the hilarity was an unintended side effect. It's true. It's so true. I do agree wholeheartedly. Also, I want to go straight into Helena's reaction, because I remember being worried. Because she was a big Dr. Julie Hoffman fan. And so for this scene, she says, I nearly choked on my saliva. I was cracking up at Julia, freaking out at Chris's appearance, and how she was still freaking out as Elliot was speaking with Chris. Chris's deadpan response to Julia was hilarious. Well, since he gets that reaction all of the time, then it wouldn't faze him, huh? I was surprised that Elliot didn't try to calm down Julia, which made the scene funnier. Seriously, the whole Julia freakout was the best part. I enjoyed it. Thanks for putting in the freakout. I couldn't imagine Julia going through her medical bag for a couple of tablets and taking them dry. Poor Julia. I can't actually remember, but was the situation with Tom biting her ever addressed in Pit? And no, of course, because Tom didn't become a vampire. He just got drunk dry by Evangelique somewhere along the way. At the end of 15. Yep, I remembered the PG-rated episodes of Dark Shadows. I think those were the ones with fake blood, mild violence, and actual witchcraft going on. It is kind of funny how the ratings kind of went back and forth, even going back and forth between color and black and white episode at times. So Hidden Object says, I can't tell how old Amy is, but I feel she has been abandoned a lot. I'm glad Chris, her brother, plans to stay.
And another pen friend. Can Chris sound any more bored to her choking and death noises? I can't blame him, though. The noises in the background are great, and in actuality, she is reacting to Tom and not Chris, and having the curse of scaring the crap out of everyone, and now that Tom is gone. And will his sister speak? Her way of throwing a tantrum, a natural affair for a child. Anne DeJennings, my dear, yes, it does help when people are honest. Full moon, Chris, you'll disappear like you always do, and you're dismissed, Chris. I'm in the present now, go away. Another pen pal, visualizing Chris opening the paints, then putting it on a table beside Amy. You'll disappear like you always do sounds like a kid versus dad argument, but it starts off like a nice, typical family reunion at my house. This type of good ending, wish reality was as easy as that, but hey, good for them both. Let's see, it says, I still kirk up when I hear segment 7 and Dr. Hoffman's reaction to Chris. Really funny stuff. Very enjoyable segment, I think. What I liked best is that there was a lot of love being displayed by both Chris and Amy. Maybe Amy seemed as though she was pushing Chris away, but it became evident she not only wanted her brother around her, but she also needed him. Loved the sweet way Chris interacted with Amy, very caring, even self-sacrificing, one might say. I'm getting the impression Chris may be of the werewolf persuasion if he disappears during a full moon. Very understandable if he is, as a werewolf isn't always responsible for his actions. This could get really hairy. Literally, hairy. You're so talented, sometimes I forget I'm only listening to your voice alone. Oh, well, thank you. I just do my best. I mean, I just wanted it to be the best that it could be, you know, so... See, that's the other thing. You know, people say, oh, you could do this with that. You could be that, you know, with your talent, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, this is the goal. This is what I want to do. Enjoy this. If you like it and you enjoy it, come to me with enjoying it. This, you know, that was part of what the internet was all about, was us sharing this stuff together, what we want to do, what we enjoy, not like backbiting each other. So I say, just go enjoy what you want to enjoy. Leave me out of it if you don't like what I'm doing. I don't say subscribe and all that garbage. I don't say like and all that garbage. And people are weirded out because they're so conditioned to want that. And I'm just like, no, this is what I want. Narrative discussion. And I got pulled around through the circus hoops and I'm done. And this is what I want and this is what it is. Yeah. So if you're just like, oh, she's just like living through these years, why doesn't anybody help her? Well, you haven't asked yourself that, is what I'm saying. So just get in touch, for God's sake. Get in touch for heaven's sake. Get in touch for whatever's sake. If you can put it all together, put it all together. So, another pen pal. Is this Amy Jennings, a twin brother who I assume is played by the same actor as the now dead brother? There is maybe something a bit suspicious about this Chris Jennings and his package. I'm not sure you should be checking what's in it. Oh, he's a werewolf? Question mark. Hopefully, Sheen. She says, oh gosh, I loved the Dr. Hoffman screams at the sight of Chris Jennings' sequence, especially since we have just recently seen the original of that in the show itself in our watching the 50th air date anniversary project. I really enjoyed the addition of the fact that Amy knows something is up with Chris at every full moon. The scene is very close to its original in the show, but that addition makes a big difference to it. Then she also mentions, let's see... Perfect Chris Jennings voice. This may be your best voice acting job yet. You are absolutely... Well, I got, you know, I was practicing all the way. Was it 2010? I did the sign of the jack-o'-lantern, just always practicing Don Briscoe. You are absolutely, utterly him. Thank you, Oisin Navoy. Also, of course, great Dr. Hoffman hysteria. That poor woman really regularly needed to use a lot more of her sedatives on herself than she did. Since we have just recently seen the relevant episode and are watching on the 50th air date anniversaries, I know that you sound completely no-holds-barred exactly like Chris in the scene with Amy. Hello, Amy. Hello, sweetheart. I would think that you spliced in clips from the actual episode if I didn't know that's not how you do things. Also, then go away! Sounds exactly like Amy did in the original. So that, I think, is the most of... Oh, gosh, somebody else. Hoffman calming down. Oh, his brother. So you're Chris Jennings. And the reaction is, yeah, doctor, I bet those sedatives helped a lot. Thankfully, they were quick acting. Again, we have so much in episode 18. The Addams Family sequence, something that I've been wanting to do for years. Because in so many episodes of Dark Shadows, you've got My Name is Victoria Winters, blah, blah, blah. Alexandra Maltke doing the intro. And now she's at the Addams Family. And I thought, now that she's at the Addams Family, let's do that same thing. But it's the Addams Family's house. So, we've got harpsichord in the background. So, that's Lurch playing, And she's saying, "My name is Victoria Winters. In this newly acquired residence, away from Collinwood, the walls shake, but only when the darling children are using explosives. The groans occur, but mainly when the butler is rolling his eyes. There's darkness and foreboding, but as I have learned, that is part of the love and part of the frivolity of this home. It's the best I could do." And it's like, so many people out there, like, I wish. There it is. I did it. There it is. Damn it. You know, there's stuff like that. And then writing down so much of what the Addams Family does, it's like, okay, badminton in the house. We can play doubles with Peter and Victoria. Sure. Oh, yeah, there's just so much wonderful in this. And then Peter's starting to chill out, too. I just figured it out. This place is a high-class funhouse. And Gomez, as Gomez says, "I could have told you that, Peter. In fact, I think I did." So we just got everything kind of working out. Yeah, I don't know if I consulted with anybody about this scene. I'm not sure. I figured I must have done, because it's an Addams Family scene. I'm trying to use a lot of Addams Family to make sure that I got all the accuracy right from old episodes of the Addams Family. Then there's Fester and Grandma Ma got very short lines. And I figure, I think Addams Family ended in 64, so if this is 68, the kids are a little bit older, but not necessarily a lot older. So, oh yeah, and then there's the great. We know that Victoria is sitting in the big Morticia wicker chair, so I got that in there too, and that they're happy that they found each other, and people are starting to leave the room. Peter doesn't want to, but Victoria says she needs to just kind of settle it out by herself. But Pugsley is also asking Wednesday to leave, and Wednesday wants to help. And so the deal with this, yeah, because so many people remember and understand that Christina Ricci, which made a great Wednesday, but this is Lisa Loring's Wednesday, which is much different. Let's see. And I know Wednesday had a thing for queens, so she talks about Queen Antoinette. Victoria asks, "Do I inspire as a queen does?" And Wednesday says, "Oh yes, you even have a queen's name," meaning Queen Victoria. Now, around the time this episode came out, I remember there was a couple people who were a little confused because Wednesday says Victoria was the longest reigning queen of the empire that ever lived. And so I put an asterisk because I remember Queen Elizabeth II had like a sapphire jubilee, something where she was like more the longest reigning. But since this episode is taking place in 1968, Wednesday can still say that and have it make sense. And it's like, I had to remind, because everybody got so scattered with so much information all at once. So I was like, yeah. So I put an asterisk saying that at the time, 1968, Queen Victoria was still the longest reigning queen of England at that time. And this episode is taking place in 1968. I had forgotten I put more Time Machine soundtrack music in this when Victoria's sort of having her weird little flashback. So she's starting to see things from the past she hasn't seen before. A house, an aged house, something familiar, something I thought was destined to have been mine. Then some Addams Family likely discussion Wednesday saying, you know, was it dark and gloomy? Or nice and gloomy? So Victoria starts describing the house that she's seeing in her vision. And then we go on about the stories and levels of the house. So she's thinking about Caleb's house that she wanted from the original Dark Shadows series. But Wednesday's asking, "Do you mean the house you're remembering, Miss Winters, or the home you wanted?" Because Caleb's house is the one she wanted in the Dark Shadows series. And then Victoria says, "The one I wanted, I think, no, the one I'm remembering." And Wednesday says, "It was your home, wasn't it, Miss Winters?" And she grabs Wednesday. Victoria grabs Wednesday. And Wednesday says, "Yes, you're very happy for no reason at all." And I love giving Victoria lines of, "You don't understand," because she's always known for always saying, "I don't understand." "These houses," she says, "we were talking about, in my mind, they were a single house. That's why I wanted the second one. That's why I loved it so much, because the one I've been seeing was my home, just like you told me. So you saw the home you wanted because it reminded you of the one you used to have." "Yes, exactly," Victoria says, "exactly." And Wednesday leaves a nervous giggle. And yeah, that is the deal where she's starting to have a revelation. She's got these memories that she can't quite put together. But the reason that she loved Caleb's house so much is that it reminded her of another one that is like super far back memory before the orphanage, if that's possible. And that's what comes of, you know, Grandmama and Morticia trying to help her like scrape through. You know, they go back to the 1790s. Okay, that's before your birth. So as far as chronological time goes, we can start there
to get your memory going, and then see if we can pull stuff away from super early to see if you can remember details about who you are, things that you might have seen as an infant, a little baby, that might give us some clues that you could figure out as an adult that didn't make sense to you at the time at all. Like, it's just pictures and things that are recorded in her mind. So that's the idea, and that's as much as I'm going to let loose. And one pen pal says, oh, at first I was thrown by Wednesday's girlish voice, as she is always so dour, but then I realized that I was thinking of the movies, but in the 60s TV show which you referenced, Wednesday's voice was girlish. So once again, you prove you know your stuff. And one pen pal relates, the walls shake, but only when the darling children are using explosives. Ah, the Adams residence. I'm not sure I'd be flattered to be compared to a queen who went to the guillotine due to false news. Is Victoria still the... Didn't Queen Elizabeth pass her in longevity yet? Maybe not when this was made, though, so she caught on. Oh, maybe the trick here is the use of the word empire and taking place in 1968, so she got it. A discussion about house heights and how to count them. I'm not sure I followed this discussion about seeing a house that was a home or wanted to be or something, and I agree it basically told me nothing, because I think that was what Milligan said. Another friend. Victoria and Morticia are always pleasant to listen to. They provide a calming effect, and Victoria and Morticia always seem so poised. I like the interaction between Wednesday and Victoria. Wednesday seems to inspire Victoria to recall in more detail the memory she was trying to remember, and that was very encouraging. I think the more Victoria remembers, the more complete she will feel. Plus, Wednesday was so upbeat. I really liked the sound effects to indicate Victoria was being affected by past memories. It would be more difficult to understand what's happening without it. I also like the fact that Wednesday was giving some facts some might not know regarding historic figures. I also liked Peter's caring manner. In fact, all of the Adams family members. It's awesome. And then another pal. Fencing lessons keeping her on her toes. Go be amused by Gomez. Hee hee. Yeah, just bother him instead of me. My name is Victoria Winters in the beginning of an Addams Family thing, yeah. Seemed like the chemistry between Wednesday and Victoria was good, and they fit together nicely in a scene. Another pen pal. The walls shake only when the darling children are using explosives, and groans occur when Lurch rolls his eyes. The darkness is part of the love, yes. Peter loves that it's a high-class funhouse. One thing is common for the families. No worries about money. Fencing keeps her off of her toes at times. Leave it to Fester and Grandmama to take a spell, literally, and in Morticia's throne, go be amused by Gomez. Ah, hidden object. Home on Cemetery Lane. It does sound nice. I'm interested to see if Victoria ever has her own home or the home she remembers. It's nice that she can learn to be herself without dealing with the terrors of Collinsport.
Okay, and now we've got the next scene. Oh, man, I was so... putting this together forever, or so it seemed. It definitely based on the original Dark Shadows. Chris attempting to hide his personal affliction in the quietest room of the Collinsport Inn. So yeah, he does ask Mr. Wells in the original if he could have a quieter room, you know, something really far away. But by this time, see, Mr. Wells isn't going to be so perturbed by the idea. He'll be a little perturbed, but he won't be as much because he has to deal with the Shriners and the Blairs, per the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. His situation is a bit different when Chris approaches him for this weird request. He says, oh, say no more. I hear you, sir. That guy with his grandmother. The growling and howling, knocking into the walls, slamming the doors, chanting, simply about moaning in bizarre voices. I heard it, Mr. Jennings. I know what you mean. Getting tired of the racket myself. So, I mean, he's with Chris on this one, on wanting quiet or wanting to keep noise away. So he's down with what Chris wants. And then, for some reason, he just mentions, you know, maybe you should have rented Gold Cottage before Mrs. Muir got it, because Mr. Wells is in the know, and we all understand that. And then the tiny room upstairs, and too inconvenient. I made some changes to that room, too, just that the door doesn't open inward, it opens outward. So he could get barricaded in there pretty well. So he's going to show Chris, just like in the original Dark Shadows. And then, yes, at the time, whenever this was, I think it was 2018, I put it together, I got permission from Sarah Monster, Slave of a Vampire on YouTube, who created the DS annotations. She did one called Barnabas Wants the Old House, and there were a couple things in there. It's like, oh, and I asked her by email,
can I grab those for this scene with Chris Jennings? I really want to use those lines. And she's all, yeah, okay. You know, she gave the okay. So, because she put in Barnabas Wants the Old House, you know, these heckles, as if this person said this thing because of the old house. So Wells is saying the Roger lines, and Chris is saying the Barnabas Foe lines that Sarah Monster gave Barnabas. So with the room up in the Collinsport Inn that is, like, really just a hidey hole, Chris is saying this is fine, really, and Wells says, but it's so dreary and morbid, which is what Roger says to Barnabas about the old house. So I have Chris say, like, Sarah Monster gave Barnabas a line. Well, so am I. Wells in the pit episode staggering forwards. To be honest, Mr. Jennings, this room is filthy. And per Sarah Monster giving Barnabas this whole thing, it's like filthy. And, well, I like filth. It seems so apt. It just seems so dead on. And I remember sending her the files, too, when I got done with the performance and all that. I'm like, here it is. So, yeah, I'd ask, with kind permission from Sarah Monster, Slave of a Vampire. It's like, it fits so damn well. Wells asks if he wants his luggage taken up. Chris says, in the morning, right now, can you do me a favor? What's that? Chris says, lock me in here. And another thing, if you should happen to hear anything during the night, any noises, I sometimes move around and act out when I'm writing. Tell me about it, Chris. It kinda gets me into it. Don't pay any attention to anything you hear. And Wells says, ha, huh. After the other guests around here, you can trust me to steer clear of any noise, Mr. Jennings. He says, be sure to lock the door from the outside, Chris says. He says, yeah, of course, sure. Want me to stick a chair beneath the knob, too. Now, after I created and uploaded the episode, I realized, oh, you know, the door probably doesn't open from the outside. Well, it's my show. Just make it. It's this weird room that Mr. Wells is saying you don't want it. One of the things that maybe somebody doesn't want is that the door doesn't open inward, it opens outward, so you can really get barricaded in, which is exactly what Chris wants because he's a werewolf and he's not telling anyone. He just wants to protect everybody from himself, including himself. And Wells tells Chris, I just appreciate someone who wants privacy away from bothering the other guests. After what I've been through, I ought to encourage it. And so after Chris says, I appreciate that, you hear closing of door, locking of door, many muffled knockings, and barricading of door, not necessarily in that order, stepping down to the lobby. And Sam, trying to figure out, well, how would he sing the Beach Boys, Wouldn't It Be Nice? So I put in the lyrics, and Wells says, that's a pretty modern song you're singing tonight, Sam. And I told Oisin about this, too. Of course, I consult her about a lot of things, or have in the past. I was saying that, you know, this is what I have planned for Sam and Mr. Wells. Because I figure it's kind of passing the buck in a good way. Sam was saved, so he's passing the buck on to Mr. Wells, who's about to be saved. You know, Wells is wondering what the heck Sam's doing there. And Sam is jovially expressing, no, I was being celebratory tonight. And Wells says, Sam Evans, when aren't you being celebratory? I can smell the sniff. What is that? Madeira, meaning Captain Greg's drink. And Sam says, meh, just a little whiskey. And Wells says, figures. And Sam says, I heard the Jennings boy was taking room here and wanted to offer a payment for his reservations. He might not have all the cash flow. Oh, and you do, eh? Says Wells. So Sam clunks down, I think, yeah, 520s, which is $100. Wells says, all right, eventually. And then there's howling from afar, and Sam says, just another dog in the night, isn't it? And Wells goes, if I kept dogs up there, stepping sounds, looking up, doesn't say looking up, but that's what he's doing. And Sam tiredly asks Wells, don't bother going up there. That's the way he's stopping Wells from going up. Well, after what I've gone through, I'm pleased as punch to stay down here and away from that racket. Wolf-like growling noises. Sam asks, and this was an Oisin suggestion, Mr. Wells, you ever have that feeling like somebody just walked over your grave? Which is kind of like you've cut death off at the pass, is I think what she told me. It sounded familiar. And Wells says, Sam, you don't know how true that is. And then she says, Sam, what are you really here for anyway? He's all 520s didn't cover it, eh? Oh yeah, I almost forgot that little distraction. And you put those away, meaning the money. Now, how about a cup of coffee with me for the road? Sam, I thought you'd never ask. So that kind of wraps things up. But then we have more kids in the hall added. Hecubus asking Master, that's rather anticlimactic. Was that the ending to this episode? Milligan says, yep, there is plenty more to come, of course. But wait, who is that out in the audience? Looks like your hand is raised to ask a question. And Mr. Tizik, head crusher from Kids in the Hall. I'm not asking you, Milligan. I'm telling you. I'm crushing your head. I'm crushing your head. I'm crushing your head.
Hecubus says, he isn't so polite, Master. And Milligan says, true, but we could use him. And then he, Mr. Tezek says, and that's what makes it great, is because it's not overlapping the actors playing these characters. That was Mark McKinney playing Mr. Tezek. So we're not overlapping actors or anything who are playing these roles. But I was really happy to put this together where Milligan is asking, well, what about me? Because Mr. Tezek spares manservant Hecubus in this episode in the pit. I just felt, you know, I've got so many anti-fans and haters and all this. I mean, for the purpose of what? And I kind of understand now. But I felt maybe this is something that they would tell me, like Mr. Tezek tells Milligan.
Who died and made you god of Cullensport, flathead? I crush you!
So, there. just Milligan does a doofus groan. And then we proceed to the very last scene with the Beach Boys song, Coffee Pouring. So, Sam asks, how is that Mildred Mayhem doing? Oh, Millie, well, have I got a story for you. You know about those postcards? Oh, do tell. Sam is sipping his coffee. Well, it seems that the printing press that Mildred caters to had some questionable business with ... and Wouldn't It Be Nice by the Beach Boys fades further in. And then we've got All Due Respect to the Kids in the Hall. A lot of kids in the hall. It goes to Mrs. Muir. The Munsters. We had Lily Munster, the Addams Family. Yeah. Almost, Lurch didn't have a line, but there was the harpsichord stuff. Bewitched. Yeah, we even had Samantha Stevens. And the Beach Boys' Wouldn't It Be Nice tune, Please Buy It. And, of course, Dark Shadows' 1960s TV show. As well as all the old classic books Dark Shadows was always ripping off. Thank you. Jokes from DS Annotations used with kind permission. And then also, in 1968, Queen Victoria was still the longest reigning queen of England. That's the asterisk. Then the little lyrics from Wouldn't It Be Nice. You know, it seems the more we talk about it, it only makes it worse to live without it. So let's talk about it. Oh, wouldn't it be nice? And that's trying to, you know, come on, people, talk to me. But you won't, because, yeah, and I know why. More or less. Some discussion prompts, and that is the end of that, minus what review or discussion we've got. One pen pal, Sam singing Wouldn't It Be Nice is funny, although he says it's celebratory. It could be seen as a bit of wishful thinking. Just another dog in the night. That's a highlight for her. That's rather anticlimactic. And that's what Hecubus says. How many episodes of Dark Shadows could that apply to? I'm glad that she pointed that out. Not being massively familiar with the kids in the hall, I had to find out about the crush, 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 crush reference. Great voice acting on that one, if I may say so. Just these things that's like, oh, I didn't think I'd ever go through all this, but I mean, you put all this like layers of community together and boy, oh boy, it heals stuff, man. And why would you give it up? And why would you care that anybody wanted you to redo one episode over and over and over and over or whatever? Like, why would you care? You're living the dream. Why stop? Okay, now let's go to other discussion.
I believe this is Helena.
Nice Sam singing voice. Okay, so you know that I'm not familiar with every aspect of DS, and I skipped out on most of the storyline, so Chris is about to kill Mr. Wells, well, because he's a werewolf, he doesn't mean to, and Sam is just, in a way, helping Mr. Wells to not fear his impending death. The scene was lighthearted, but I'm a little confused. Also, I like how Sam tried to cover the expenses for Chris tearing up the room in werewolf form. Just another dog in the night, huh? Love that line. Mr. Wells had a lucky intervention put in by your creative genius from Sam. I'm surprised that Mr. Wells didn't call the police to report the Blairs for all that racket that they were making, or on Chris for seemingly having his own issues that may discredit the establishment. Meh, a little whiskey, Mr. Wells. Figures. Was a good one towards Sam's drinking habit. Didn't Sam kind of sober up towards the end in the show? Yep, Sam definitely doesn't know how true that is. Sam kept Mr. Wells alive for another paranormal event. A cliffhanger when, you know, Mr. Wells and Sam are talking about what's going on. Does Mildred Caters have questionable business with the Collins family or with the Blairs or associated with another show? Cliffhanger. And I was like, I was just coming up with random stuff they were saying at the end. I only wish I had a little more information, but I'll wait for the revelation. So now I understand Pit 18's ending and the whole Mr. Tezek thing, but he seemed to be the type who is friendless if he's going around crushing heads, but that's just my opinion. Oh, hidden object. Ignorance is bliss, eh? Poor Mr. Wells has his hands full. I like the joking. Would you like me to put a chair beneath the knob? Oh, would you? Haha. Let's see. Another pal. A little noisy in that room with that guy and his grandma, the Blairs. Mr. Wells understands Chris need to be alone completely. I am crushing your head like putty in my hands. Roundhead, you're saved. Flathead, I crush you. Head crusher from a distance, says another friend. Good transition. Fades away into the distance as we already know the story and allows good time for them after he saved him from the wolf. Another pal. Fun segment. Enjoyed the discussion between Sam and Mr. Wells. Light but a feeling of foreboding. I liked that Sam was so jovial and the banter between Wells and Sam was amusing. Since you revealed that Mr. Wells died in the original Dark Shadows, that was clever to put the song Wouldn't It Be Nice as well as the reference about walking over your grave with respect to Mr. Wells. I like the fact that Mr. Wells is still well. I'm hoping Mr. Wells will survive in your story. He seems like a very kindly and accommodating gentleman. Enjoyed your singing too, or I should say Sam's. I took a look at the Crusher Head guy and I don't remember seeing him, but I do remember the bit. Maybe you did it, or maybe while you were watching an episode I heard it. It is funny, in a weird kind of way, and very inventive. I also took a look at Sir Simon and Hecubus. I remember those two actors on Kids in the Hall. I must have had moments that I watched it. I always thought the guy that does Hecubus was cute. Dave Foley. It was fun ending with Sam and Mr. Wells having a little coffee party and sharing some stories. Very pleasant way to end the episode, and again, I like the Beach Boys song, Wouldn't It Be Nice, to emphasis the gift of life you gave Mr. Wells. Very nice. Let me wrap it up with Oisin, her thoughts. Of course, I love this version of the Chris and Mr. Wells scene, and Sam saving Mr. Wells in such a low-key, matter-of-fact way, a life saved by a coffee break, as it were. And ha, I love seeing the I'm crushing your head bit appear at the end of this. We told our kids about that recently, and of course, they were having great fun crushing, unquote, each other's heads. The Chris and Mr. Wells scene is great fun. I love that interchange about it's so dreary and morbid, so am I. Credit to Sarah Monster, Slave of a Vampire, thank you. And finally, I love that reference to all those classic books DS was always ripping off, and that's what's in the Elder Respect list. Because, like, we have to mention that, you know? There were so many, and then, I don't know, it seems like there are a lot of fans who just don't understand that aspect, and I worry, or I did worry, and now I'm just kind of... What can you do? So I think that is more or less it. So for Braving the Waters, episode 18, in the radio drama, The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, script built over 2 years since 5 October 2016, and posted on the 12th of December 2018. Audio completed and uploaded 11 December 2018. Wow. Whew. Okay. Over 2 years. Ah, yeah. Plenty of Easter eggs. Yeah, for mini shows. Whew. I had said it was such a big gap, but, I was trying to catch up with... Yeah, I'm looking at that collage I made, too. Got Endora and Samantha. Got Sam and Captain Greg. Elizabeth and Bill Malloy. I'm sure Oisin put that together. And Victoria and Wednesday Adams. And Chris and Mr. Wells. It's the only color one in the collage for Braving the Waters. It's nice. And I had to put the little snowflakes in because I know it was December on DS. Wow. Yeah, it's a long time. And yeah, I was just trying to get out of the nonsense and the cuckoo and all that. And that's why I try to be honest about a lot of my own personal flaws, whether or not I am responsible for them, because in a lot of ways, I mean, we're living on a planet where everybody is connected in one way or another. I mean, it was a nice idea. It was definitely a great idea to try and put together freedom of choice. And in some cases, we have that, but there are so many variables that make that iffy and dependent on what the rest of the community is doing. So much of the time when I was trying to learn how to drive, I was told, you're going to be fine. And I said, I'm not worried so much about me. I'm worried about the zillion other people who are surrounding me and you and everyone else. You have to be concerned about that. That's why I loved what another member of my church told me. When you get behind the wheel, you have to have faith. You have to. It was very good, not only advice, but observation. Get behind this wheel, you have to have faith that things are going to turn out okay. So that's why I've been so angry. I just, over the years, I get so angry and just trying to get an answer out of everyone, not knowing about the severe hypnosis that was going on. And now that I understand persuasive tech and surveillance tech and all of that stuff, and I knew that growing up, and that was why people were so upset about me and my tape recorder and my film camera. Yeah, because they knew back then. They don't know it now, but they knew back then. Somebody's going to have more information about me than I do. And then it was all embraced in the last 10 years, and I watched everyone pretty quickly change. So, with this episode in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, wouldn't it be nice if Mr. Wells didn't pass away? Wouldn't it be nice if these things didn't happen to us? I had to use that song, and, wouldn't it be nice? You can get in touch with me. Wouldn't it be nice if you could? Email xoiscythe@hotmail.com. Again, xoiscythe@hotmail.com. If you can, if you do letter form. If Google Hangouts is still open, I might still be there. The other thing that you could do if you just need, like, something random, other people have done this, they just throw a comment on a YouTube video that I've done. I don't really upload anything there anymore. There's some Vimeo stuff, too, if you want to go there. It just depends on what's the most convenient for you. But yeah, for some reason, that's easier for some people. I get a thank you every once in a while on YouTube, or something equivalent to a thank you. So, if you want to do that, cool, but I'd rather have long-term friendships. That is my deal. That's my shtick. That's why pen pals work better for me, personally. I'm not really interested in just the short-term stuff. So there is that, and that's why I prefer DreamWidth to the other social media, which are more like casinos. And they're more like casinos because you celebrate, hugely, a $5 win when maybe you spent $100. And it's something that the casino does to people. They just celebrate this little win like it's huge, forgetting that there was major losses along the way. Yeah, that's why it really does seem like a casino. And among many other reasons, it's actually built that way. So I've tried to just stop using that stuff. So me talking about the discussion and the narrative discussion for these episodes, if you feel like in listening to that you're being excluded, well, all I have to say in answer to that is, what did you do to me? I mean, you may not have meant to have done it, but I shared a lot and I was severely excluded. And what on earth do you think that's going to do to somebody? You know, I'm not trying to guilt you, I'm just telling you. What do you think that's going to do? And I'm sure that a lot of you have experienced the same thing. You're putting all this stuff online, you're getting told this is going to work for you, and then it doesn't, and you feel even more lonely. There's a loneliness epidemic. And there's even stuff, my husband read in the paper about a lot of this social media stuff. The Surgeon General is now involved. And I called it years ago. But in any case, going back to, I didn't share to be excluded from the enjoyment. I shared to include you all with me in the enjoyment, and I try to get a lot of this stuff as accurate as possible to be convincing. So I'm just going for accuracy. If you care about scandal over accuracy, this show is not for you, nor am I. If you care about scandal more than accuracy, there's a lot of other venues to enjoy, and I am not included in any of them. It was very difficult to fight the way out of the social casino racket and the surveillance racket and the persuasive tech racket. But I do feel like I am continuing that journey. I hope you've enjoyed this. I would also like to apologize to any pen pals worried about me. There is not a whole lot I can do without the telephone right now. I am very behind on a lot of stuff dating all the way back to January. So that's about as much information on that I can give you. But if you want to use YouTube videos to have tiny conversation back and forth, I haven't opened the Google Hangouts tab in a while. Maybe I'll give that a go. And there's the email that I repeated twice on this podcast. There's WordPress. There's dreamwidth.org I mentioned before. But yeah, I'm not going to use the other stuff. It's always been pretty bad. More now than ever, you know. But in any case, I really enjoy doing these retrospectives and just trying to go through everything. It's fascinating. It's therapeutic, and I hope it helps the people who really like this and maybe are just too darn shy, or maybe are trying to remember how to talk to each other and talk to me. And also, yeah, I mean, there's so much trivia in it. I base the jokes on that. I base a lot on that. And yeah, I'm happy to keep going. You know, I've got these issues. And I haven't been able to get in touch with a lot of pen friends, but the pen friends I have been able to get in touch with, One of the things I've tried to say, if the pit healed me twice, maybe it could do it a third time. I am looking forward to that. And anyone who doesn't like this and doesn't like what I'm doing, move on. It's not for you. I was following very bad advice, and I'm sure you were too. Let's go our separate ways. And for the people who love it, find a way to break the spell and correspond again. Don't worry about anti-fans of me. Don't worry about haters of me. They're stuck to these devices. They're stuck to these companies who train them to be that way. Get in touch with me. Want to talk narrative? That's what I want to do. Yeah. This is the glory in the dream. Or it darn well ought to be. And a wonderful quote from the great Douglas Adams that I heard in an interview at the end of one of the Hitchhiker's Guide series that they put on. People say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. That may be true in some cases, but in other cases, a word is worth 1,000 pictures. Not sure if I got that verbatim, but after scrolling through so many images for 10 years, I needed that quote so badly. And one of my great heroes said it long, long ago. Get in touch when and if you can. And for the loving and humble part of my audience, take care.